welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. Hello, everybody. It's Jessica from the podcast. I'm so glad you're with us for another episode. Today, I have a really fun one. I'm speaking with Rachel Tolstrup. Rachel and I were raised in the same town, but we're a few years apart from each other, so we didn't know each other personally. But today, we're talking about her amazing family. She is a mom of 8 children, ranging from age 20 down to age 2. So she's been through every season, and we're going to talk about the amazing things about a large family, the hard things about a large family, how she deals with mom guilt, how she gets her body back, how she pays for everything. I mean, these are all questions we've all wondered when we've seen a large family. But one thing that's undeniable is the incredible love that they have in that family. And she is a delight to talk to. I can't wait for you to hear my interview with Rachel today. So let's get to it. All right. I want to welcome Rachel Tolstrup to the show. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
How's it going?
Great, thank you.
Good. Well, like we mentioned before we got on the call, I know your family very well, but we've actually never met. You're the oldest in your family, and somehow you are beyond where I was with your siblings and everything, and so we've never met, but I'm excited to chat today.
Thank you. I'm excited.
This is so fun. So will you just give a little background on yourself and your upbringing and your current family now?
Well, I grew up in San Diego, California, and I love it here. I still live here. I'm the oldest of 7, so in my family, my mom and dad had my brother and I biological kids, and then were not able, through infertility, to have any other kids, so they adopted 4 kids every 2 years, and then at 42, my mom got pregnant out of the blue.
Wow.
So there's 7 of us total, and my mom actually had my youngest sister 5 weeks before I got married.
Wow.
So I'm 20 years, almost 20 years older than her, and then about 3 months after I got married, got pregnant with my first baby and had her a year later. So my youngest sister and my oldest daughter are a year apart. So my mom and I have kind of been able to raise our families together, which has been great. So I have 8 kids, and I've been married for 21 years, and my oldest is turning 20 in a month.
Wow.
So and the youngest is just turned 2.
Okay.
So 6 boys, 2 girls.
Wow. And so every time you go in for an ultrasound, are you thinking like, it's got to balance out a little bit? You're very
totally.
Boy heavy. I have only boys. I have 3 boys. And every time I'm like, seriously, another boy? Like, I'm happy about it. It's great. But it's just like, you would think it'd balance out a little bit, especially with 8.
Right. Exactly. And this last baby, I just felt so strongly there's one more baby. And I thought in my mind, well, it's because it's going to be a girl. And so we did the whole like reveal pinata thing. And when Blue came out, I literally called the doctor's office the next day and I was like, there's a mistake. It's supposed to be a girl. And they're like, it's a blood test. It is a boy. And I was like, okay, well, I guess I meant to have 6 boys.
And it was a boy. That was
and
not
it was
wrong.
A boy. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So we're going to get all into that, all into how much they eat and everything like that. I'm sure that's a big question you get. But let's go back to when you just had your first. Do you even remember those early days with just one baby? What was that like going from not being a mom to being a mom of one? What was that like? Was it what you expected?
Well, so my siblings are pretty spread apart. Like I said, I'm not 20 years older than my oldest, than my youngest sibling. So I spent a lot of time being a mom growing
sure.
up. And some people think that you would resent that. I didn't. I mean, there were times when I was a teenager, of course, that I was like, oh, I don't want to babysit. But I always wanted to be a mom. I would listen to that little song when I grew up. All I want to be is a mom, as a mother. I would listen to that all the time when I was younger. Whenever my brother and I played the game of life, I would always end up with 2 cars going around the game board full of children, and he would be the millionaire with no kids and win. And I would always lose. But I felt like I was winner because I always had the most kids. So I always wanted to be a mom more than anything else. But so the transition was pretty easy going into motherhood, but I still remember it being hard. Like with one, it was like, oh my gosh, I cannot get everything done in the day that I need to get done, which cracks me up now.
Right.
But whenever I talk to people with different, you know, ages of children, different numbers in their family, I always tell them, for me, number one was the hardest. And they're always like, what? No way. And I really do feel like one was hard. You're learning everything. You kind of get in your groove as you have a little bit more. So one was hard. I remember that.
I think that's really important to acknowledge, especially for people that do have only one, you know, maybe to three children. And then they look at your family. They feel like they don't have room to complain or be stressed or be tired because it's like, well, you right. have eight. But right. I mean, anytime you have dependents, it is hard. It's a lot. It's a strain on you.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. And so how quickly did your next come along?
It kind of goes 2 years and then 3 year gap and then 2 years and then 3 year gap. So okay. we kind of did them in little chunks because I knew that 3 year gap is a great gap. Mm. But in hindsight, looking back at everything, I would have liked to have spaced them a little bit closer because especially because we have a big family, I love being able to have everybody in the same house under the same roof all at once. There's something magical about that.
Sure.
But I needed that 3 year gap sometimes. And so I just listened to my body. I listened to what felt right before we would plan another baby.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're right. Like your body kind of knows when it's ready or when it still needs its own care and not ready yeah. to like take on another human. Was there yeah. anything you did to help transition between adding each new child, either for the children or just for yourself?
I kind of have forgotten a lot of what I've done in between, but I know that when I would have what I liked about the two together and then the 3 year gap is I always felt like those two had each other. Mm. So when the next one came along, they didn't feel like they were being totally looked over because they had that sibling bond.
Sure.
And then I could focus on the baby while the other two kind of entertained each other. So, and I used to do like a little birth gift where I'd have a little gift for the kids when they came to the hospital. I think I stopped that after baby five because I realized the baby is the gift. And I just tried to incorporate them as much as possible into the baby. Mm-hmm. Like, I need help with the diaper. Can you get me a diaper? Can you get me a pacifier? Can you watch the baby? Like, just look at the baby. I would just have like, look at the baby, you're watching them. And they felt like they were important and part of it.
Sure.
Because I read this book one time called The Baby's the Lesson, and just how much if you can try, and it's hard because you don't want to give them their babies. You don't want to give your little other kids too much responsibility. They can't do a whole lot for a baby. But if they feel like they're being valuable, then they feel like they're part of it.
Yeah, I think that's huge. And I think that's true for our husbands sometimes too, right? Especially early on when you're the one feeding the baby and getting up and nursing, and like there's that instant bond for moms. And I think yes. especially like for my husband, he like really thrives when they turn like 3 or 4, when they start doing more activities and he can really wrestle and play. But early on, sometimes there's that disconnect for husbands. So really helping them to get involved early, I think is a great idea.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I just remember every time my husband would come from work, I would hand him the baby because it was like that was his time
yeah.
to be able to bond with them. Because I do think dads do miss out a little bit because you bond through service. And when mom is doing all of the service needs that the baby requires, the dad doesn't really get that same feeling. So as much as they don't like changing the diapers and doing the burping and stuff like that, give the dad one role where that's their thing. And my husband's thing was always, he was the one that could always settle the babies down. Like, he knew how to hold them. So that was his thing. And I started calling him the baby whisperer, which I think made him feel important.
Sure.
And so now to this day, like, if the kids wake up in the night, I'm like, they need the baby whisperer. And it's funny because instead of resenting it, he's kind of like, oh, all right.
I'm the guy. Yeah. Were you always on the same page that you wanted a large family?
Yes. Which is surprising because I think most husbands kind of tap out after a certain amount of time. I mean, there was a couple, I think what I would say to my husband is I'd be like, okay, I'm feeling like I'm ready. And he's like, whoa, really? Like, he knew he wanted more. And I'd always be like, well, you need to pray about it. If you get a different answer, you let me know. And his thing is a baby is never bad. Mm-hmm. So he would probably keep going to 10 kids at this point. Like, he keeps kind of making little jokes to me about it, but I'm like, I'm 40, I'm old now. So, but yeah, he's always wanted a big family just like me.
Yeah, that's awesome to be on. What a blessing to be on the same page like that. Yeah. And I think sometimes it's like, husbands kind of want their wife back. The kids can kind of hold the wife captive a little bit with their attention and with their physically and everything like that. So that's great that he was on the same page with that. Okay, so I'm sure what everybody is curious about too is you have 8 kids. Your body has stretched out and stretched back and stretched out and stretched back. you are gorgeous, Rachel. Like, people look at you and they would never guess you have 8 children birthed from your body. I mean, let's just lay that out. How has that process been? Have you had to really work to get your body back? Are you kind of just blessed with good genetics? How has that process been? Because that's really hard for moms to really feel like themselves postpartum.
It is hard, and I don't think I kind of recognized how hard it was. I remember being at a church activity where the daughters were modeling their mom's wedding dresses, and I was sitting next to a really heavy woman who I loved, but she was very heavy. She had 6 kids, and her daughter wasn't modeling the dress, and in my mind, I thought, oh, it's because her mom was heavy, you know, and the mom leaned over to me and said, oh, I wish my daughter could model my dress, but she can't, and I was like, oh, you know, it's okay, and I was kind of doing that, and she said, yeah, it doesn't fit her, and I was like, yeah, that's okay, and she said, I was a size 4, and my daughter's taller and bigger than I was, and I, like, had this, like, shock, like, what? Right. How did you get from this tiny little petite woman she was really heavy. And so I went into my OB appointment after my second baby. And I was saying, oh my gosh, I can't get this last 10 pounds off. I'm working really hard. And he's like, Rachel, give yourself a break. But he said, but I know you want a big family. He said, I will tell you that if you have, you know, 10 pounds every baby, you want 8 kids, that's 80 pounds overweight by the end of this cycle. Mm-hmm. And it really hit me. And so what I did is I made sure I gave myself a year. After every baby, I'm giving myself a full year. I'm not going to stress about the weight. I'm going to get it off after like a year and a bit. And I worked really hard making sure I had good nutrition. I worked out every day because I always said to myself, I've got to get back to the same weight, and not necessarily weight, but fitting into the same clothes after every baby.
Sure. Yeah. So, your body's never even quite the same. It may say that number on the scale,
right?
But it's never quite the same.
Right. Right. So I have like different sections of genes of like that I've slowly like kind of worked towards, but I think the biggest thing people need to understand is it takes you 9+ months to put it on. It's going to take you 9+ months to take it off. And especially if you're nursing, sometimes it's easier, sometimes it's harder. You've got to make sure you're getting your body good nutrition. Don't beat yourself up, but be really mindful and take care of your body, because the healthier you go into the next pregnancy, the better the pregnancy is anyway. And the other thing, my first baby, I gained 50+ pounds. And the other babies, I didn't do the whole I'm eating for 2. I was careful. I didn't just go binge on chocolate. I was really careful because it's a lot easier to get 30 pounds off than 50 pounds off after a pregnancy.
Sure, absolutely. And so, but I'm sure there were days where you like looked in the mirror and you're just like, it's not snapping back. Like, how did you kind of get out of that funk more mentally than physically? You know, like physically we know like, I just grew a baby. Like, we can give ourselves that. We know this information. We know how much we stretched. But, like, mentally, how do you feel good about the new stretch marks or the stretching out or things like that, where you just look and feel different than you did, you know, 8 babies ago?
I kind of look at, like, my stomach obviously has a lot of stretch marks, and I look at them as my battle scars. Mm. Like, this, I earned every one of those stripes. And my stomach will never look like it did before I had babies, but thank goodness, because if I had to have no stretch marks and no babies, that would be more crushing than having a stomach with stretch marks. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So I have to kind of, you have to play a mind game with yourself, because it can become overwhelming in your thought process about, you know, I don't look as good as I would like to look. My jeans don't fit as well as they can. And you have to kind of push it aside and put some positive on top of that, because it will overwhelm you. Yeah. And one thing I noticed for me is when I weigh myself, it can completely transform my day. I can wake up in the morning and feel a certain way. I step on the scale and all of a sudden I can feel bad the entire day. So I'm really careful. Or if I don't weigh myself, or if I weigh myself and there's a good number, then I'm happy the whole day. And I don't want a number to determine my day. So I've really just tried to not focus on the weight on a scale. I've tried to focus on how my pants fit. And just as like you slowly have to rubber band your jeans as you're pregnant, you slowly fit back into them when you're not.
Sure.
And I have to just keep my mindset focused on the positive, that this is a long-term goal. It's not a short-term fix. And I need to be able to enjoy life and be happy with my kids. And if I'm in my head all the time about how I'm unhappy, about how I look, I can't be with my kids fully. Mm. And I have daughters, and I need them to understand that it's not all about appearance. So for me, it's always been, I really try and make healthy choices, but I do allow myself to have some treats, but because I work out and I stay active.
Sure.
Because I don't ever want my daughters to feel like they can't live a normal life.
Right. And the motivation to work out, to be healthy, to eat healthfully, all those things, it sounds like it's not motivated by the vanity aspect primarily and first and foremost. It's really just, I mean, to have that energy, to be healthy, to be able to serve and love these kids fully in the way that you want to.
Right. And I think the big thing, like with all of our kids, we've always said that at all times they're in a sport. Every kid's in a sport. And so mom and dad are in a sport too. Like we all are staying active. Yeah. That's just what it's all about.
Yeah. So how do you do that? I mean, there's people with one child or two children that are juggling schedules, getting everyone where they need to go. And then they're looking at your family of eight and everybody's in a sport. Okay, how do you do that? How does everyone get where they need to go, Rachel?
Well, the good thing is they're not all, like, the babies are not in a sport, thank goodness. So we started the older kids really young, like in soccer and stuff when they're like 4 and 5. We don't do that with the other kids now. We usually start about first or second grade putting them in a sport.
Sure.
Because we spend the time playing with them in the backyard. And one really important thing to for everyone to remember, when I was trying to decide about whether to make my family bigger than 6 kids, I was talking to a mom one time and asking her, like, oh, I just don't feel like I'll be able to meet the needs of each one of my kids, because this woman had 8 kids.
Sure.
And she said, Rachel, you won't. And she said, but that's where the gift of siblings comes in, where you can't. And she said, you have to understand the gift of siblings sometimes is more valuable than what you can give them at the time. And I see that on a daily basis with my kids. So yeah, my little ones are not in organized basketball right now, but they're playing basketball in the backyard with their brothers.
Sure.
And they're filling all these needs that I'm not out there with them every second playing with them or doing things, but their siblings step in and help out. And I think the older brothers mentoring the little brothers in basketball is way more effective than if I went out there and tried to pretend that I know what I'm doing on the court. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There's pros and cons of big families, large families, and then smaller families. Like, but you just weigh all those things and just like look at the best of it, right? And just
keep
going. Well,
and even with a small family, even if you, my sister-in-law was just here and she has 2 kids, the sibling is still a gift. They still are able to kind of jump in when mom maybe can't or have that special bond and relationship that just helps each other out. So big or small, siblings can be such a gift.
Totally.
And they've been really helpful with our sports. Getting kids to and from. I now have drivers, which is life-changing.
Sure.
Really life-changing. And for sports, the one thing that I've really tried to do is when I do send my kids up for sports, I write on the bottom of the page, they need to be with this other person. I always have to make sure there's a carpool before I go into the sport. And if there isn't, I say I can't do it because logistically we can't.
Sure.
So that's worked really well for us is doing carpool. And then my husband and I just tag team. Most of the time we love going to our kids' games. So we try and be at all games. But if we can't, we don't beat ourselves up about it, and we just know that there's going to be one family representative at every game if possible.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And I love how you've just found a way to make it work for you guys.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not going to look like anybody else's weekly schedule, and I can't even imagine what your Google Calendar looks like. But
crazy.
have there been times where you have felt guilty, like, oh, I wish I could be at 2 places at once? How do you deal with that mom guilt? Because mom guilt is true no matter how many kids you have.
Yeah, I think we all, like, it's the same thing with weight. It can crush you, or you cannot, or you can let the guilt go and not let it crush you, because I think your kids need to understand that you want to be at everything, but you can't.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, I kind of just make compromises. So I couldn't volunteer every week in my son's class like I'd done with the other ones because I just had a baby. So I said to him, I can't come in weekly like some of the other moms, but I'm going to be at every class party. And so then I was at every class party, which is once a month instead of once a week.
Sure.
And so what I do with the kids is when I can't be at something, I explain to them why and then tell them, but I'm going to be at this, so that they're aware. It's not that I'm just like, don't want to be there or don't have time for them. It's that I'm making priority to make something else special for them.
That's really cool. How did that occur to you? Was that words of wisdom from somebody else, or did that just work itself out?
I think that just kind of like out of necessity.
Sure.
I think my parenting style started out one way and kind of evolved into a different way because because of the circumstances of 8 kids and the busyness of everything involved, I've had to prioritize and really like dial it down to what is most important. And so over the years, I like joke with people that I used to be a very like type C personality where everything was detailed and organized and things like that. And every baby, I've had to let a little bit go that I thought was critical. And then I realized at the end, it's not critical. Hmm. And so some of those things are, I used to volunteer in the classroom every single week. And then with the younger kids, I just can't do it. And so I do different things. And so it's just kind of taught me to like pull back a little bit, look at the big picture and what is the most important. Because I realized even with the volunteering in the classroom, I was doing a lot of copying and paperwork and I wasn't with my child.
Sure.
So I try and make every moment that I designate for my kids with my kids.
Yeah.
About my kids.
I love that. That's a great way to think about it. And you have to have so much energy to do all you do, Rachel. And so to waste energy on worry or guilt or second guessing or worrying what other people think, like, you don't have time for that, right? And
right,
so you just gotta
right.
spend your energy on what's productive and most meaningful to you. And then you can get things done.
And something that's really valuable that my mom taught me years ago was, because I was like, how do you have so much energy? Because she had 7 kids.
Yes.
And she's like an energizer bunny. And she said, I pray for energy. And
wow.
I think that's kind of discounted that we don't realize we can pray for energy. We can pray and say, Heavenly Father, sometimes I'll look at my day the next day, and I've Instagrammed it a couple times because it's literally a joke. Like, I don't know how I'm going to, like, I'll screenshot my Google Calendar and I'll
yes.
think there's no human way I'm going to be able to get all this done and breathe. And, but then that night before, I'll just have to say, Heavenly Father, this is my day tomorrow. I need your help getting me through it and getting me to get everything done that I need to get done. And for some reason, it always ends up working out, and it's busy and it's crazy, but I kind of can motor through because I know I'm getting help.
Yeah. Well, and what I've noticed about your life too, like following you on social media and stuff, because I'm a stalker like that, is that not only are you doing the things that you need to do, getting kids where they need to go, but it seems like you do reserve some discretionary time. You're at SeaWorld with your kids. You're going to the park. You're doing these fun family activities that are just enjoyable, not necessarily just the have-tos.
Yeah.
How does that kind of play into like your mental state and your ability to like create this like holistic life that you really are happy with?
Well, the one of the many nice things about a big family is there's always something going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, my sister's got 2 kids and she was saying like, how do you guys go do so much? I'm like, well, if you have 8 kids, inevitably they're going to have a fun activity, one of them once a month. So
yeah.
you end up having to kind of do fun things. But what I try and look for, because kids are expensive, is I try and look for deals and discounts and, you know, free passes and things like that so we can kind of go do some fun things and just try and make sure that we are having fun doing fun things and creating a memory. And part of that reason is I do my Instagram with the chat books and all that, and I have 7 siblings, right? So all of us kind of have a little bit of a different memory of how we were raised and how involved our parents were. And it's almost like my journal of saying to the kids, no, we were, Dad and I were there. Because they kind of go through this stage a little bit where they remember all the times you weren't there, some kids.
Hmm.
And it's different personalities. And so I like documenting these great, fun, eventful times and the great, fun, uneventful times to be able to show them someday as a parent, we were there for you. You know, in your teenage years, if you ever feel like we weren't, here's proof. We were there
yeah,
for you.
See? Yeah.
You know, and I love playing with my kids. Like I love watching them do fun things and we happen to live in a beautiful city. And I don't know how long we'll be able to stay in this city because it is really expensive. And as our kids grow up and move, we want to end up being where our kids are. So I try and make the most out of living where we are as possible, just going and do as many of the fun San Diego activities as we can.
Yeah, I think that is so wise. And that reminds me the other night when it was Free Dairy Queen night. I mean, they
yes.
probably thought when they saw your van pull up and saw you guys come in like, oh, here we go. This day is made for the toll strips, right?
Yes.
Free ice cream for everybody.
So I sign up for like all the restaurants. I put my kids' birthdays and our birthdays and anniversaries and all that stuff on all the local restaurants because then you usually get a free meal.
Yeah.
You get freebies, things like that. So I think there's a lot of ways to have fun and do activities as a family that's cost effective. You just kind of have to be proactive and go sign up for as many as you can and just check the, there's usually like free, like when they'll offer free things, they kind of post it on Facebook, and I just kind of try and follow those, like the 7-Eleven day when you can get your free Slurpees, and we try and just do as many of those things as we can where we can save money.
Yeah, that's so wise. Are you able to do family vacations? Because that can be a huge expense to people.
We do. We do family vacations, and we mostly do road trips. Mm-hmm. We, in fact, my parents had a timeshare in Mexico that we didn't use for years and years until I realized we could drive to one of these locations, and that way is affordable, because we just couldn't afford to fly our whole family. It's way too much money. So so we drive to most places. We go to Canada every summer, which is a two-day drive there and back, and we stop all along the way, but we make it, the road trip really fun. And we actually did fly to Hawaii for Christmas this last year because my son had a basketball tournament. But the way we afforded that is all the kids gave up their Christmas. So they decided that it would be more fun to go to Hawaii and have an experience and have Christmas come. Of course, for the little kids, Santa still brought them a little stocking. But that was it.
Yeah.
And so I've just tried to like allot money into vacations. But when we go, we are not extravagant. We don't go out to eat. We pack lunches. We go to the store beforehand to get treats, so we're not stopping to get treats at the gas station. So we try as much as possible just to be budget conscious.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've learned a lot along the way by necessity.
Yes.
Yeah. So now your oldest daughter is away at college. You're about to have another one leave this year, right? Is your second son a senior?
Yeah, he's a senior, and he's going to be putting his mission papers in the next little bit.
Yeah, so you'll then have two. What is away from the home? What is that like to not be all under the same roof? I can't even fathom. My oldest is 7, so I can't even fathom.
I'll probably cry a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Because I just love having them all here. There's no better feeling. But then again, I would not want to take a mission away from my son or this college experience away from my daughter. It was really hard when we took Taylor to school, and I missed her terribly and I cried about it. But as soon as I started to realize, I thought back to me in college and how much fun I have and what a growing experience it was. Then I started to realize that this is such a happy stage. Mm. Because this whole time I've just been like dreading when my kids leave. It's like, it's the end of an era for me. And I was looking at it through my perspective and how sad it'd make me instead of the beginning of an era for them and sharing in that happiness with them. Mm. And I think that's going to help me get through my kids growing up, because I'm dying that they're growing up. It's killing me that they're growing up. But instead of looking at it from my perspective on how sad it makes me, I need to look and see the joy that's brought into their lives from them moving to the next stage.
Yeah.
So I definitely, I Skype. Taylor and I would FaceTime all the time when she was in Hawaii. And we talked a lot on the phone and we texted, and I still stayed a part of her life there. I followed all her roommates. I told them, I'm the mom stalker, but I got to know all of her roommates. So I kind of felt like we were experiencing it college with her.
Right.
And the mission will be different because we can't talk every day and things like that. But I hope that we can still keep that same connection with Caden while he's gone by, you know, packages and letters and emails once a week.
Sure. But seeing your kids happy and thriving, I mean, really, to parent well and work so hard for 18, you know, 19 years, and then see them really coming into their own and making, you know, hopefully all good choices, you know, and even when they don't, like picking themselves back up.
Right.
That's got to be incredibly rewarding, especially when you can view it from that perspective of look at what they're doing with their life. Like, yes, it's not the same as it used to be, but look at what they're doing.
Well, and my OB said to me one time, because she knows I have this really hard time with my kids growing up, and it's like, I feel like for the last 20 years, I've always had a stage, like a different stage age in my kid's life. And right now, I have a child in every stage.
Yes.
And she said to me, instead of mourning when each stage is over, you need to celebrate and make the stage that they're in the best stage ever. Mm. Instead of looking back and be like, oh my gosh, I missed my 1-year-old. I'm so sad you're getting big. Celebrate the fact that you have a 2-year-old and how fun that is and how great that is. And so I've been trying to do that spin a little bit more instead of being so sad that they're growing up and just living in this happy, I'm so happy that you're 2. This is going to be the greatest year. I'm so happy that you're 9. That's such a fun year.
Mm-hmm.
And just living in the moment instead of regretting that they have to grow up and get big.
That's a great perspective. You have a very wise OB. Mine have never been so awesome. Like conversational.
She was awesome, awesome. She retired, so that means I have to officially.
So now you're retired too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Do you have a favorite stage now that you've been through them all?
No, it's funny. I don't, because they're all so different and so great. Each personality hits that stage differently, and I think it will be, you know, hard as they get bigger that I'm not going to have them each of the stage, because, you know, like when my husband comes home from work, the two littles come running and, you know, throwing themselves in his arms. So I think we'll miss that excited stage, but I love each stage that they're at. I love the relationship I have with my teenagers. I love the excitement that my 9-year-old gets because I'm his Cub Scout leader. I love how my 6-year-old, limitless opportunities in his life, like that's what he feels every day.
Yeah.
And it's like every stage is so fun. I don't know that I have a favorite besides perfect newborns. That is probably the greatest thing ever. But that is so short and so fleeting. But I am addicted to babies. I'll take a baby any day.
And not all your babies have been easy, it appears. You've had some colicky, hard babies, but you still love them.
Yeah, I haven't had any colicky, but okay. Most of my kids have been chronic ear infection babies, which is hard because that puts you into the whole you can't let them cry it out stage, because you don't know if they're crying because they're learning to sleep or if they're crying because they're in pain. So I haven't, when I have babies, I typically don't get a lot of sleep. My babies don't get a lot of sleep until we hit the 1-year mark where they can get ear tubes. I think 6 out of my 8 have had ear tubes and had the surgery. And then my last few, I had a hard time with milk production. So that made it really hard. And I was always stressed about getting them enough milk and drinking fenugreek and herbal tea constantly and, you know, things like that. But the interesting thing about motherhood to me is most of those hard times, like you bringing it up, I had to go, were my babies hard? I have a very, very healthy mental block on hard things about motherhood. And I don't know if that's a hormone that's released or if that's just my personality, but I think I'm able to block most of the negative from anything being hard. And I just remember the happy times about my babies.
Wow.
And not that it wasn't hard. Like I know it was, but that's not where I go to when I think about my babies. It's like, I think about rocking them and snuggling with them and stuff like that.
Yeah. And it's not like you're beyond that. And so you can think fondly upon those years and years ago, like you're still in that. So the fact that you can be in that in the present is really a beautiful thing.
Right. Well, I do get a lot more sleep now than I used to get, but you know, you make it through it and it just, it becomes kind of all those sleepless nights or times when you're like, how am I even, I remember walking out from the room one time and bursting into tears. My family's waiting for me for family prayer and saying, I know why sleep deprivation is a form of torture, because it's hard. Like it's hard. Yes. But when I think about that baby, I don't think about that moment. I think about the happy moments.
Absolutely. Is there anything that you feel like, do you feel like a much better mom now than you were when you first started out? Like, have you learned anything? Would you do anything differently? And have you done things differently because you've learned through each child?
I think I definitely have relaxed a lot, and not in the important things. Like, you know, my kids still know there are rules that we follow and guidelines that we have, but I've relaxed. Like with my first kids, I ironed all their clothes. I laid their clothes out every night. My daughter's hair was curled every day. And now my little boys come down in the morning and what they're wearing, my son today is wearing all Navy shirt, Navy sweats that are his older brother's sweats. They're rolled 5 times. And he walks down, instead of me being like, oh my gosh, he kind of looks funny, I think he looks adorable because he picked his clothes out himself.
And that's the beauty of boys too, right? You don't have to do their hair. So it's like, it's fine.
Yes, exactly. So I think I've kind of let a lot of things that I thought were critical go, and I become a more relaxed mother. And I think that's part of being able to live in the moment, is you have to kind of let the things that you feel are so important, a perfectly clean house, like things like that, you have to let them go so you can actually be with your kids in the moment. Mm-hmm. And not to say that you have to have a messy house. I know in my, what's worked for me is if my kitchen and family room are basically picked up, then I'm okay. Then I know that I don't care. Then I don't have to worry about the rooms. I can close those doors. And then I can kind of live more present in the moment. So I think I've become a better mom just because I've learned to let more things go and to just not worry about things that aren't really important.
I like that. So you've really been able to hone in on, okay, what are the things that actually matter to me? The kitchen really matters, having that organized in the living room and that space that you're constantly in. If that feels okay to you, then the rest is okay. So do you have really formulaic, strict, like, organization as far as chores and cleaning and everything like that? Or how does that all work?
They all have job charts that they have to do every morning. So every morning they've got to get up, clean their rooms, unload one part of a dishwasher, and empty their buckets. And their buckets is where their laundry is, and anything that I find out around the house goes in their bucket, and they have to empty that once a day. Now, that doesn't always happen. That's the ideal, but it doesn't always happen.
And okay, then wait, I have a question about the buckets.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So every child has a bucket.
Yeah.
And so anytime you find something out of place that is theirs, you put it in the bucket.
I do.
And then they empty their own bucket.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't put it away for them.
Lunch that they didn't put away, and I throw it in their bucket. And they know.
Yes.
I mean, I've gotten, if I have a child that hasn't emptied their bucket or cleaned their mess in a few days, I will put dirty dishes in a bag in their bucket. Because I'm like, I am not your maid. You clean up after yourself. And I have one particular child that is the worst offender. But it's just kind of made them aware of how much they leave things out.
Okay.
And it's just a simple IKEA. I can't remember what it's called, but it's like this nylon box.
Okay.
We call it their buckets.
That's amazing. What a great idea. And so do you keep the buckets all in one place and then you bring stuff to the bucket, or do you carry buckets around, or how do you
do that? They're all in the laundry room.
Okay.
And they all have their name on them.
Oh.
So each of them has a labeled bucket. And so as I'm doing laundry, I don't fold their laundry. So that's one thing I've let go.
Okay.
I do not fold their laundry, and they don't fold their laundry. They stuff it in their drawers. And it took my cousin telling me, because I was like, well, it's going to get wrinkly. And she said to me, do my kids look wrinkly? And I was like, no. She goes, Rachel, I haven't folded laundry in years. I throw it in their drawers.
You're kidding.
And it's been life-saving for me. So as I'm pulling things from the dryer, I throw them in their bucket. They take them up to their rooms, and they empty them.
Wow.
So
that is life changing, because literally,
yeah,
like, I work hard, like, once a month I'll go through their drawers, I'll fold everything nicely. How long does that stay folded? Like, literally
a day.
3 minutes.
A day.
Yes. It's like the next time they open the drawer and they're looking for that one shirt that's at the bottom, everything is spilling out and they can't close the drawers again. So why don't we just not stress about that? How many loads of laundry do you do on average during a week?
I usually do 4 loads a day.
4 loads a day. Okay.
4 loads a day.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I have kids in sports.
Uh-huh.
And so,
stinky.
Like,
boys.
My son brought his jersey in yesterday, and I was like, oh my gosh, I have to wash it right now. It smells so bad.
Do you have a favorite detergent for especially stinky, sweaty clothes?
You know what? I used, like, the grocery store and Kirkland brand for years, but I started using just the Powder Tide, and
okay,
I think that one washes better than anything I've ever used.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. We'll put that in the show notes. That's helpful.
Yeah.
I'm not far behind you with all those stinky boys athletic clothes.
Yeah, they get pretty stinky.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. This is fascinating. This is great. Okay. And then, like we mentioned before, kids are expensive. So have you felt like you've had to restrict, like, you just get to do one activity, or, like, how do you allocate all the, like, financial resources to the kids?
So they do one sport, and my husband usually, they're in club basketball, so my husband usually tries to coach, and then the kids are comped.
Mm-hmm.
Which is very helpful.
That's helpful.
So that saves money.
Uh-huh.
They all do one sport at a time, and then we do piano lessons. So they all have to do an instrument, a sport, and then they usually are involved in scouts or activity days. And we host an art class at our house once a week, which we end up getting free because I organize it, I get the kids, I have the space, and then I bring in the art teacher, and everyone pays the art teacher, and my kids are free.
Genius.
So it's been awesome. We've done that for about 8 years, and it's amazing. It's their favorite part of the week. And the other thing that's kind of, I kill two birds with one stone, is it's a built-in play date for my kids. Once a week, all their friends come over. It's wild. There's 20 extra kids here. It's a blast. It's super fun. And then I don't have to organize all these play dates because I have it built in.
That's
perfect.
That is so smart. That is so smart. I love it. What is the best part of having a large family, and what is the hardest part of having a large family?
The best part is just, I think, the mad chaos. It's just, I can't describe it. It's just this feeling. In fact, I had this little girl come over here one time, and she comes from three kids in her family, so there's still plenty of chaos at her house. My house was totally messy. I'd just gone to Costco. There's Costco over, there's kids running, there's babies crying. It was, like, probably not, like, an idyllic moment in my mind. And she went like this, oh, someday I want this when I'm a mom. And it kind of made me look around and I was like, you're right. This is great. Like, this is wild. There's kids running in and out. There's backpacks everywhere. And so it sounds a little bit crazy, but it's fun. Like yesterday, I think my son, between all my kids, I think we had 8 extra friends over. And there's always something going on. There's never a dull moment. And I kind of love that. I have to get past that little bit of, oh my gosh, it's crazy, it's cluttery, it's dirty. I have to like tamp that down and be like, it's going to be okay, and breathe, and then I'm okay, and then I can just enjoy it. But I think the best part is there's always something going on and always someone to spend time with. The hardest part is probably the expense and the traveling. That's sure. probably the hardest part. It is expensive. And I remember thinking that little kids are expensive. And newsflash, they are practically free compared to older kids.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. I can't even imagine.
They get pretty expensive.
I mean, I don't even know if you want to share. Like, do you have a food budget?
We do have a food budget, but Costco ends up costing us around $400 to $500 a week. And I tend to typically just go to Costco because the grocery store is just so much more money.
Sure, absolutely. So, yeah, and Costco is like made for a family like yours. Like, yeah, yes, obviously.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, you actually go through the whole thing of whatever large thing that is. Yeah. Yeah. How do you recharge? You have 8 littles that are always, well, and bigs now, but that are always needing you, always needing something. How do you make time for you?
I think my biggest thing is I read a lot. Mm. Like, that's my recharge. And I'm in a book club, so we do a book club once a month and I love it. And I read. So I'm either, as I'm cleaning the house, I'm listening to my audiobooks and I have a Kindle next to my bed and I read before I go to bed. And that kind of is my favorite parts, is to just kind of fill me up, and it helps me go to sleep at night. Cause otherwise I think my mind would be running a million miles a minute about everything I need to do the next day.
Sure.
So as I read, I get to go to someone else's life, and then I don't have to worry about my worries or problems. And then I can relax and go to sleep. And the other thing I like to do is I multitask. So on my computer, like if you were to look at my computer right now, I have my main window open with like my email and my calendar, and I'm helping my son work on his college applications. And then in the right-hand side of the corner, I have Netflix up. And so as I'm like doing calendaring or emailing, I have a show in the background. And so I'm kind of half paying attention, but I still feel like I kind of get in some of my favorite shows.
Sure. So. Absolutely. Yeah. And you still feel like you're tapped into like normal life and what people are talking about. Yes. Without feeling like completely deprived. Yeah.
Yes. And then that working out for me is big. I really need that time in the morning without having to worry about anybody. And usually as I'm driving to and from the gym, I listen to my scriptures. And if I finish my scripture reading by the time when I start working out, then I can turn my book on.
That's awesome.
So that's what I normally, but I listen. Like, I know you get so much more out of scripture reading when you're reading, but for me in my life right now, listening is how I'm able to get it in.
Yeah. Listening is better than nothing, right? Yeah. And I'm sure that could quickly go by the wayside. That is amazing. What would you say is the most important thing you want to teach your children? Is there something that you really try and focus on with them?
Well, it's interesting. So my son has his Eagle Board of Review tonight. So last night we were kind of talking about some of the questions. I'm like, Scout motto, Scout oath, like things like that. And then one of the questions was, which one of these things is the most valuable? It's trustworthy, loyal, friendly, brave, you know, courteous, kind, thrifty, reverent. I'm getting them out of order. And I sat there thinking, I wonder what the most effective, like what's the most important thing? And I think he said clean is what he said. And he said, now, Mom, that doesn't mean like clean, like my body's clean. I said, no, that means you're clean, like clean hands, clean heart. And so we were talking about a little bit. And I think if I can teach my boys, because living clean to me means in every area in your life, you're eating clean, you're speaking clean, you are keeping your mind clean, you're saying kind words because you don't want that cluttered in your brain. So I think, like, as we were talking last night, I thought that is a really valuable thing, especially with boys nowadays, to keep their minds and their thoughts clean, because I'm raising 6 boys. They're going to be 6 fathers and 6 husbands someday. And I want to make sure that they're clean.
Yes.
And for my daughters, I want to be able to help them know how to recognize someone who keeps their life clean, because clean means so many things.
Yes.
If you're clean in your business dealings, if you are open and honest in everything, then I think you're a happier person.
I think that's so smart. I've never really thought that much about that word in particular, but I think, yeah, that is kind of an overarching message of kind of how to structure your life in a way that kind of leads you where you want to go.
Well, that's and nice. The other thing my mom always taught us growing up is she'd always say, I'm an open book. And she said, I never want to have anything in my life that I'd have to hide from anybody else. And so we've also taught our kids to be really open, and I'm probably like way too open sometimes where you can ask me anything and I will tell you anything, and I probably divulge too much, but I like it when people are a little more frank and, tell it like it is a little bit, because I think we get to know each other a little bit better by not pretending to be something we're not, because we're just open. This is me. Like, I'm mostly late all the time. My house is messy a lot, and my kid's hair isn't done most of the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you are welcome to come to our house anytime, see how we live, see how we operate, and this is us. And for the most part, it's a good us. Like, I don't think that people that come over, and I'm sure there are some that are like, they are slightly crazy. They've got 8 kids. But I think when you come over to my house, there's a feeling here because we love to be around people. So welcome.
Yeah.
Feeling.
Yeah. You love each other and you love anybody else that walks into your home. I think that's probably very evident.
But the other thing too is you're going to walk into my house and you're going to see it is not perfect. My kids are fighting. They haven't done their chores. You know, they haven't turned their homework in. We're late. We're this, we're that. But so I kind of like seeing in other moms' lives and seeing that they're not perfect. I have a hard time with perfect because I love people that can be open and honest about their imperfections, because I think it draws us all closer together because we all have them.
Yes, no, absolutely. And that's what this whole podcast is centered around. Extraordinary moms are not perfect moms. We're not here talking about how perfect of a mom you are, Rachel. Like, you're amazing and inspiring, but you're not a perfect mom that's like, oh, I could never be like Rachel. I could never do what she does. I don't want anybody walking away from any podcast or any person's story feeling like, I could never do what they do. I'm not as good as them, you know?
Yes.
I want them to feel like, oh, them too. Me too.
Yeah.
Oh, got it. Like, we're all in this together. And,
well, and we all rely on each other. Like, one of the biggest helps in my mothering is all my friends around here that we rely on each other. We carpool. We look out for each other's kids. You know, it's really a group of moms, and that's what helps us raise our kids.
Yeah, I love that. Well, this has been so fun. I feel like we could go on 1,000 different tangents, but you don't got time for that. So I want to wrap up with one final question, Rachel, and it's this.
Okay.
What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
I think I would tell my pre-motherhood self to start out relaxed.
Mm.
To just start the journey and enjoy every moment, because I remember when my baby Taylor was a baby and I couldn't wait for her to be in the primary program at church and sing. And I think I would tell her, enjoy every minute because it flies.
Mm. I love that. This has been so fun. I want to have you back to talk specifically about teenagers too, because I feel like a lot of people dread the teenage years, but I feel like you have done a great job. And so I want to talk more about that on a different episode if you would ever come back.
I would love to, because I love teenagers.
That's amazing.
They're awesome.
Rachel, you're awesome. Do you have a blog or do you have anywhere where people can find you or follow your family?
I just have an Instagram, and it's 9tollies, which I need to change it because I have...
Now you're 10tollies, yes.
I need to change it to 10tollies, but right now it's 9tollies.
Okay.
The number 9, TOLLYS.
Okay, and we'll link to everything at extraordinarymomspodcast.com, and they can access that because it's so fun following your family.
Okay,
thank you, Rachel. Thank you. My husband always says, like, good parents should have 1,000 kids because, like, kids need great parents, and you are one of those. So I'm glad you've had 8 kids because those are 8 lucky kids.
Thank you very much.
Well, I hope you have an awesome day. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye. Wasn't that an awesome conversation? Rachel is truly amazing. She is so inspiring, and I love how she just embraces every season of motherhood with such joy, and I think that is something that I'm really striving to do in my own life, and so that really just resonated with me today. So, like we said, if you want to see pictures of her family and where to follow them, you can go to extraordinarymomspodcast.com. I'll have links to everything we talked about there. And then you can always follow me on Instagram at JessicaDahlquist3, on Facebook at Extraordinary Moms Podcast. She's just amazing. So I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I would love to have her back to talk more about teenagers and transitions and all that good stuff. So you may see her again on the podcast in the future because she is truly an extraordinary mom. So I hope everyone's having a great, great day. I hope you had a wonderful Easter, and thank you so much for always tuning in. If you've left a rating or review on iTunes, thank you so much. It really has helped new moms to find the show, and I'm getting new people, you know, emailing me every day saying thank you that I just found the podcast, and it has been such an inspiration in my life. I love bringing these moms to you every week, so thanks for tuning in and being amazing. I love this community so much. So I hope everybody has a great day, and I'll see you next week for another episode with another extraordinary mom. Bye.